at Legal Services in Anchorage. He's been to our hearings, and he is working for Legal Services to help people with allotments. Now, he can't help if you didn't apply, or your son and daughter didn't apply before December 18th, 1971, but it may be that you want to talk to her.
What do you
Nunam kamatum pen kan kati.
To Hununa routing the ragatom wing of the Kumia way with a yacht hung Nuna of the madam. Do I yet be looky, Nuna got something in the Kanako? Charlie Pakrayat.
I guess she's disturbed by what's occurring right now. People are fighting over land. And in Ikak, she's a Setnet permit holder. And in Ikak, she said she's gotten a lawyer too. I guess to retain her little plot or the Setnet site. And she said she pays for it every year and someone else claimed it. She said she doesn't have anything else to say.
Thank you, ma'am.
My name is Jacqueline M. Aloha Wilson, a full native from Savunga on St. Lawrence Island. I married a native from here, and that is why I'm in Dillingham. We have three children. I am proud of my culture. My ancestors did a fine job of surviving. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. They certainly wouldn't believe the transition we, the modern natives, are going through. They probably didn't think we would adopt another culture so different from our traditional culture and lifestyle. Looking back over the years, I can see that the transition took its toll. I see Native children who are not quite sure of their own identity and culture, especially in regional centers such as Dillingham, Nome, and Bethel. The Western society is dominant. I see young people trying to make it in the modern society. Some succeed, others don't. The ones that don't make it go through life working at a menial jobs or resorting to welfare. Some even get into crime, which is oftentimes drug and alcohol related. Their self-image is poor. Unfortunately, I see too much of this going on. We have young people who do not fit in a traditional Native setting or the modern Western society. It just doesn't seem fair. I've asked myself why this is happening. I even went back and did a little research and came up with what I think are some of the factors behind it all. First of all, I read in Alaska's history that one of the first educators of Native people was Sheldon Jackson, a Presbyterian minister. He came to Alaska, sized up the Native people, went back down to the States, and told the people down there that Alaskan Natives needed to be saved and taught the civilized culture. These are not direct quotes from any book, but I assume he crusaded in that manner. Then over a period of time, missionaries came to Alaska to save and teach the natives about Western culture. Then came the BIA teachers. A personal experience I'd like to share with you, and I'm sure that you've heard a lot of these, is at the age of 7, I started school at Savunga. The teachers, a white couple, were teaching hygiene, the English language, and basic reading and math. We are to only speak English in school. Every morning, our ears and fingernails were checked to see if they were clean. There was a chart on the wall. If our fingernails were a little dirty, we got a yellow star. If they were real dirty, it was red. Clean meant white stars, and everybody wanted to get all white stars by end of the week so we could get a prize or a reward. The hardest part was learning the language because everybody in the village spoke Yupik. So here we were, speaking broken English in a school, but once out of school, we were back to speaking Yupik. Breakfasts and lunches were provided for us because we were considered undernourished or lacked vitamins or something. I remember having to eat oatmeal in the morning with no sugar and forever having spinach. We were also excused to go home 1 hour after lunch. Most of us would race home to eat the real food at home. In many villages, including Sivunga, villagers looked upon teachers and missionaries to run village governments and deal with the outside world simply because natives didn't know the procedures of running village government in the white man's way. Sarah Kovashnikov, an Aleut and a lawyer, wrote an article called The Role of Native Corporations in a Changing Culture, and I meant to have this copy with me. And I quote, "In rural Alaska, towns tended to evolve with local white residents in central positions, even though the population was at least to start with largely native. The store owner, school teacher, and our missionary became the local focus for the social system. These people often were also the postmaster and radio operator, controlling communications, or the supplier who controlled the distribution of goods. In many cases, the new white immigrants became the emissaries between the developing town and rest of the world, thus taking on political power." Unquote. And she also mentioned in this article that each regional corporation must manage both lands and the resources of the entire region for the benefit of the entire region. Managing land is, of course, an alien concept to Native peoples. At the age of 8, my mother decided to move to Nome because she was a widow with 4 children. Perhaps life was just too harsh for her raising children in a subsistence world. My older sister was entering high school, and she didn't want her to go away to Mount Edgecombe or Chemawa. In Nome, school was especially hard because I couldn't speak fluent English. I was cast off as an underachiever or a slow learner. I experienced the ridicules from kids, both white and native, because of my language. Peer pressure was tremendous. It was like getting pressured to throw away my nativeness. I had no choice but to learn fast. My mother was very supportive. Without that support, I don't think I would have made it. I learned the English language. I learned the Western culture. In fact, I've lost some of my traditional culture. I don't know how to cut up a seal or live in a traditional lifestyle. I've adopted the Western culture. I can survive in today's world because I've gotten exposed and I have experienced the process. In the latter part of 1960s and early 1970s, land claims was a real controversial issue. I really didn't know what we were getting into with the land claims. All I remember is signing up and telling people in charge that I was a full native. I told them my grandparents' names for both my father and mother's side of the family. Trying to spell traditional native names in alphabets is quite complicated because the English language doesn't have spellings or pronunciation for some native sounds. This was quite a process. Many native people didn't understand the Land Claims Act because it was set up in a Western method. So here we were, Alaska natives, fresh in learning Western culture and lifestyle, being railroaded with this Land Claims Settlement Act set up in the white man's way. Many natives didn't understand the concept of running a business or corporation set up by the act. Many of these corporations were mismanaged because natives simply didn't have the experience of running a business. Lawyers and other non-natives benefited from this act because they knew how to run the businesses that the act created. I believe education plays a key role of surviving in the future. Diplomas, degrees, and such play large role in Western society, so we need to drive our young people in that direction. We need teachers that promote nativeness and give support to native children. They teach to develop pride, so that young people will have identity and know how they, who they are and where they come from. Unfortunately, there are some teachers who are trying to standardize schools. I'm not saying that this is bad. It's just that they are so busy trying to keep up with national educational systems that they fail to note the cultural differences of the students. I've known teachers who don't give a darn about Native culture or think Native culture is important. How do you expect Native students to succeed outside of school when they can't even succeed in the schools? So the attitudes of teachers toward the culture is very important. Perhaps this is one reason why so many of our young Native people don't have the incentive to further their education or training. In closing, I would just like to say that if the intent of ANSCA is to make Natives free and equal land owners and in control of their own lives, then more time is needed. 20 years is not enough time to change a culture that has been in existence for thousands of years. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wilson. Well, maybe we could take 5 minutes for coffee and donuts. Are there any donuts left?
There's donuts, but no coffee.
Oh. Well, we can take 5 minutes for donuts. Would anybody like to speak now? We've had 10 very interesting submissions, and I certainly found them all helpful, and I want to thank all of those who spoke. We'll take 5 minutes to stretch our legs and have some donuts, and then see if anyone else wants to say anything. I think we've had a good discussion since we started at 1:30, and had quite a few very interesting presentations. So, if anyone else would like to say something this afternoon about the land claims settlement, corporations, 1991, whether the children born since 1971 should participate in the settlement, subsistence, sovereignty, any of these questions, you're certainly welcome to do so. We'll be here tomorrow at 1:30, and that's, I think, been especially set aside so some of the people, the young people, can participate, but you don't have to wait until then. And then, of course, we'll be holding a hearing at the Native Convention on Monday night. If you'd like to say something, if you wouldn't mind coming and sitting at this microphone, then whatever you say can be taken down and will be transcribed. That means it'll be available to me so that when I write my report about ANCSA, I can base it on what people have told me at all of these meetings around the state. So, so there. It's really a question of, what did you think this land claim settlement was supposed to do? How has it worked out? Did it work out well? Did it work out badly? What do you think? And where do we go from here? What about the sale of shares after 1991? Should Native people be allowed to sell their shares if they want to and get some money for them? Or should their right to sell their shares be restricted so that the Native corporations and the land will stay in Native hands? Those are pretty tough questions. We've been talking about them all afternoon, and
she'll testify tomorrow.
Oh.
She wants to think about it.
Okay.
I want to think about more. I could write some of them down, and then that way I'm kind of forgetful. I may not be saying the right thing.
Well, it deserves a lot of thought.
If I could kind of write them out roughly, I could remember them really quick about in my time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'm speaking to the youth tomorrow morning sometime, so I'll be telling them a little more about it, too. Could I, Ms. Wilson, could I ask you a couple of questions, if you don't mind, since...
I work with the region-wide youth conference also, and they'll be testifying tomorrow at 4 o'clock. I think it's
4 o'clock, yeah. Fine, good. I really enjoyed your presentation and the your analysis of the impact of the dominant society on Native people here. And you said that, well, 20 years isn't enough time if... you're supposed to be making the transition. I wondered if you'd tell me a little more about that.
Well, see, in some of the villages that you have gone to, you notice that the lifestyle is pretty much traditional. People are still relying on the subsistence lifestyle. And it's hard for them to sort of change that lifestyle, you know, to a modern 8-to-5 job in a setting away from that village, you know, or more or less. And also in these villages, the cash economy, there is no cash economy, you know, subsistence is a way of life, and changing a culture it's going to take more than 20 years because it's a slow process. I was put in a position where I had to get myself together and say, well, if I'm going to make it, I'm going to have to really change my thought pattern, my lifestyle, you know, to a Western lifestyle. But when I especially see the elders, their lifestyle has been set. You know, they've gone through this pattern. They know only the subsistence lifestyle. It's going to be hard to see them, you know, trying to change, and it's hard enough today as it is.
Well, it's one thing to change from subsistence to an 8-to-5 job, but in the villages, there aren't very many 8-to-5 jobs.
No,
I mean,
isn't.
What are people supposed to change to? Where are they supposed to go if they change?
Well, I think, the transition is going to have to be slow. As mentioned before, education is something that plays a real large role in this society, and it seems to me that there's not very many natives who are getting, you know, that education right now.
Well, if you had native people in the villages, and every teacher was a native person, and every person running a store in a village was a native person, every bureaucrat in a village was a native person.
Mm-hmm.
You'd still, you know, that's no more than, what, half a dozen jobs in a lot of villages, eh?
Yes, but the thing is, natives really need to start getting in control. As it is right now, you know, with the missionaries coming to Alaska, the teachers were, you know, most cases from the outside. And they brought with them, and they, you know, they taught the kids that the concepts that they themselves were, taught in growing up. And so they bring these concepts up to, you know, a village setting. And they practice that. They teach it to the kids without really taking for granted or the difference in cultures. I think I'm getting overwhelmed here, but... we need to see more natives in the spotlight, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Native teachers are good teachers to native children because they understand the culture and they have the awareness, whereas some people who come from the States don't. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yep. Oh, sure. Well, this question of selling the shares in 1991, have you any thoughts on that?
I hope that the regional corporations will always be in the hands of native controlled. I'm hoping that enough shareholders will get educated and be taught into that way, to that thought that they need to hang on to their shares, because it's so easy to sell a share, say after 1991. I picture some person that has like maybe 8 children or 12 children, and it happens to be a very poor fishing season. It's going to be very tempting to sell shares, you know, if somebody comes flashing $100,000 in front of them. Unfortunately, you know, it's so easy to give in at times, and that's a real concern that I have.
Yeah, but any idea about what, if anything, should be done about that?
Well, we need to start educating the shareholders. We need to sort of educate them on a level that they'll understand. I mean, we could get teachers or we could get people out there and say, well, you know, this is we're going to educate you about what could happen in 1991. A lot of times they're presented in a way that people cannot understand. They're using sophisticated words or methods that the people aren't, you know, understanding or getting the comprehension of what 1991 is all about. I see a lot of that going on. My children aren't shareholders. I'd like to see them become shareholders. In fact, I'm not a shareholder in any regional corporation because St. Lawrence Island is a reserve. We claimed to the whole island.
You took the land and not the money.
Not the money.
And you got the subsurface too.
Yes, and that's good. I'm really happy with that.
Okay, thanks very much. Maybe, Joyce, we could use that long mic and you could go around, just see if anybody wants to say anything from their seats. Can we do that, Jim? Just in case you want to say something from your seat, Joyce Johnson can go around with this microphone. It's really a microphone. Looks like a ray gun or something, but...
I'd just like to understand what's going on. That's why I'm here at these meetings. Feeling I don't understand all the issues.
Yeah.
And I guess I haven't been reading enough, or maybe I just like to be kept up with the issues, yeah. What's going on. Especially this issue of 1991, since it's so important.
Well, I've been traveling around the state to find out how people feel about the Land Claims Settlement Act, the how it worked out, and we've been to 56 villages and towns to listen to what people have to say, and sometimes we spend as much time explaining the issues as we do listening to what people have to say about them. But I guess, let me put it this way, all over the state, Alaska Native people are concerned about what will happen after 1991. The $962.5 million in the 44 million acres of land that Congress provided under the 1971 Act, under ANCSA, were turned over to Native corporations, and most people hold shares in their village corporation and their regional corporation. Well, those shares can't be sold to non-Natives right now, but after 1991 they can be. So if enough outsiders come in and buy up those shares, if enough Native people sell them, then BBNC and Dillingham Native Corporation and village corporations will be owned by non-Natives from Anchorage or Seattle or someplace else. And Native people won't own their land anymore. So people are talking about, well, what can we do about it? And some provisions already exist, like the land bank that Mr. Nielsen mentioned, where corporations can deposit their land. Other people have said, well, let's get Congress to pass a law, or let's give corporations the right to pass a resolution that restricts the sale of shares so that Native people who have shares in Native corporations can't sell them to non-Natives after 1991. Other people have said, and in fact it's been said in some of the villages in the Bristol Bay region that we've been to and other places, they've said, well, let's transfer the land from the corporations to the IRA governments or to non-profit associations or to cooperatives and keep the land safe for Native people in that way, so that even if the corporation goes broke or somebody takes it over, the land is still safe. I think I better stop there. These issues really are difficult, and I've tried to put it as simply as I can, but that's what the kind of thing people are arguing about and talking about at the meetings, and that's what the folks here have been talking about this afternoon. We'll be here tomorrow afternoon from 1:30 till maybe 5 or 6, and then we'll be here. We'll be around Monday night at the Native Convention if you want to think about those questions and say something about them. Well, anybody else like to say anything this afternoon? Well, I think that I can simply say that being 4 o'clock, I guess this is a good time to adjourn and to thank you for coming, and thank especially those who spoke, and to thank Dora Klein for acting as interpreter and for speaking as a witness yourself, Dora. And to say that we'll be back here at 1:30 tomorrow afternoon, and if you'd like to come then, you're certainly welcome. And we'll be at the Native Convention on Monday night, so people can testify at that time. I'm going to write a report about ANCSA and about all of these issues, and that report will be ready in September, and I'll send it in the mail to everybody who testified at these hearings, and I'll send it to every village corporation and every village council and every regional corporation and every regional nonprofit association. So you'll all know about it and get copies about it, and I'll give you my recommendations, what should be done, what I think should be done on the basis of what you've told me, and I hope it will be useful to you. So unless anybody else wants to speak, I think this is a nice, quiet Saturday afternoon in Dillingham, and I guess if you want to stay till that coffee is ready, you're welcome, and we'll see you tomorrow. So thanks very much. Yes? You know, anybody can come tomorrow. The young people are coming at 4, I believe, so anybody can come at 1:30 onward.